Let me just rename myself.
Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. On the 50-yard line.
Good morning. Good morning.
Sorry, we're in the same room. Hi, this is Ellie.
Oh, no worries.
And this is Andrew.
I've definitely had the same room echo happen before. It's particularly funny when you're talking to the person.
Yeah, so now we keep only one microphone open.
Yeah. I guess we'll give it a couple more minutes for people to show up.
Hey, it's Ben.
Hey, Ben.
Hello.
Good morning.
Morning. For those of you already here, I added the meeting notes in the chat. If you wouldn't mind adding yourself there with your email, that would be wonderful. I promise not to use this as a spam list, as Brian seems to think these are going to, you know, going to be done, but.
Sorry, which chat is it? The chat here for the Zoom meeting?
It's in the Rocket chat.
Oh, sorry.
No worries.
It's, yeah. It's just chat.hyperledger.org. And the channel is the Crypto Lib.
Okay, let me try to get that done.
Wait, sorry, which chat room were you talking about?
The Rocket chat?
Oh, yeah, gotcha.
Okay, I guess I'm there. Let's join. Good.
Awesome. I guess we don't have anybody from Indy here today yet, do we?
That doesn't look like at the moment.
Yeah.
Some of the sovereign folks were sort of interested, but I'm not sure whether they managed to join.
Yeah, I haven't seen them join the meeting yet. They've said they joined and they didn't say that they wouldn't join today. So I don't know what the exact deal is. But I guess we can go ahead and get started. So today I mostly thought we should talk about kind of getting started integration efforts and how we'd want to add code to the library to start collaborating. And the projects that I had specifically been told about were kind of the Intel Indy collaboration on the signing libraries and the Sawtooth Indy collaboration on the signing libraries and the Fabric Indy collaboration on some of the identity mixer functions. So I guess if we don't have the Indy people here today, then we can't explicitly talk about that. But it would still be good to talk about getting code in the library and how we want to integrate. So Manu, you were going to add some code.
That's the idea, yeah. But this is not something that we're carrying over from something that we already have. But this is
right.
A work in progress that we're doing with some Indy or Evernim and Sovereign people.
Sure.
So our plan is to build that in the lib that we start doing that soon.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so this is not something that we can just dump in there
right.
Immediately.
What exactly are you planning on putting in there?
So this is what we call zklang, and I'm also,
I think
Jan and Maria are also in this call that are all working on this. What we want to do is basically have just some easy way to express the zero knowledge proofs that we need with all this identity-based stuff in a privacy-friendly manner. And then we hope that we can, you know, have a single implementation or at least interface that both Indy and Fabric can use.
Right. I'm curious, Dan and Mick, are you all, from Sawtooth's perspective, are you all interested in this sort of thing?
I mean, if there is some interest, then I mean, I'm happy to sort of give the presentation that I gave yesterday to WCC about zklang, what it is, and where we want to go with that. I could just repeat that presentation here in this group. I could just share the slides if you want. They can view it offline. It's really up to you guys.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. I was
going to say, I think that'd be interesting. Yeah.
I was replying on mute there. We're interested, but I think, at least for myself, wholly ignorant of what zklang entails right now.
Okay, I mean, when should we go over that? Do we want to do that today? Do we want to do that later?
Short of Indy being here to talk about other tactical matters, I'm definitely for hearing it if the speaker was ready to present.
I'm ready. I mean, I just did the same thing yesterday, so.
So it's awesome. Well, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, like great. Let's do it.
Good. Let me share my screen. Let's see. Let's just do it like that. Then we go in presentation mode here. Slideshow. Okay, so this is, as I said, I mean, it's a work in progress, or as Manu said, it's a work in progress. I guess the idea here is it's, on the one hand, the implementation, but it's also standardization of like a language to express zero knowledge proofs, but not zero knowledge proofs in general, but sort of the zero knowledge proofs that we are using in Fabric and in India as well to represent, if you want to do a proof of a credential. And I guess where this came from, it started from, in some sense, out of WCC, where they discussed verifiable claims. Actually, I should have been using here verifiable credentials, what they call them now. And so verifiable credentials are like a very high-level container or data format to exchange credentials. It's very abstract. It says, okay, so I want to have a credential that states, gives the first name, last name, maybe says that I'm over 18. It should be from this issuer, where sort of issuer would be URLs. It's all URLs, all this kind of stuff. And so I guess on the one hand, it's nice because you don't have to worry about any cryptography whatsoever. If you do that, it's something like you would do in real life. I mean, if you walk up in a bar and the bartender asks you, okay, please show me your passport to prove that you're over 21, you know exactly what to do. But of course, I mean, with cryptography, that doesn't allow you to, I mean, it's not at least immediately clear how to implement that with a cryptographic algorithm. And in some sense, that's also what the WCC had been struggling with, sort of trying to map these verifiable claims to the actual cryptographic protocols. And on the one hand, because there's lots of different cryptographic protocols that could realize something like that. And on the other, I mean, it really requires a cryptographer to do all this transformation. So, so here is sort of how verifiable claims are meant to work. And of course, this is like a credential infrastructure or a setup here. So we have some issuers that issue credentials to holders. So holders would be users who get this. And then the users can present that to an inspector or a verifier, I guess, or sometimes it's also called a relying party. So I guess the holder would be the person walking up to the bartender, and the inspector would be the bartender. And so I guess this would be the verifiers. And sometimes there's some kind of registry maybe that might be needed in some implementation of this. Maybe in the registry you just have all the credential formats stored, that you know actually what the definition of a passport is, that you maybe can look up public keys or verification keys of issuers. So I guess it's like a common repository for these things. And right, so here's like a more in-depth view of what a claim is, what a verifiable credential is. A claim is essentially some user, maybe having the name of Pat here might be one thing, but some user would be over 21, so that's a claim. And then you map that into a verifiable credential. You would have like this data structure here on the right-hand side. So essentially there's a credential where identifier that defines which credential types you have. Then the verifiable credential can have several claims. Several statements of like the holder of this will be over 21, first name, last name. There might be some metadata, and then there's a signature by the issuer. So that's like the high level format of these things. And I guess Let me go to the next. There's more to that, but I don't think it's important. So in order to realize this verifiable credential, like on the one hand, of course, you could use X509 signatures, and that's one way to do that, but then that would not be very privacy friendly, because if you get a X509 certificate from some issuer that states your first name, your last name, your birth date, etc., if you would go to the bartender and present this credential, of course the bartender would then see all this information in that credential and learn much more than just the fact that you're over 21. Now, in real life, that might not be so bad, because people are bound to forget all of that information. But of course, in an electronic world, you don't want to do that, because that information gets stored, gets distributed. And so it's like a privacy risk, but of course also a security risk, because there's just too much information there that on one hand would have to be protected, but on the other hand can be lost and misused and be abused for whatever identity theft and all kind of other things. So therefore one should use like more advanced cryptographic primitives to do that. And as I said, there's a number of ways that this could be implemented, and the question is how that should be implemented. Already for an X509 signature, of course, an X509 signature, you could use RSA, DSA, all of that actually to sign that. And if you deal with X509 certificates, you don't have to worry about whether it's RSA and whatnot. And so we want to sort of get the same level of generality for the privacy-friendly ways to do that. Okay, so here's like an example of like a signature scheme. So that's like on the level of RSA signatures. And I'm not going to explain these formulas to you, but I guess that's how you would prove knowledge, the zero knowledge proof of a signature on some message. And the message could now be let's say your birth date, and then you would sort of use this kind of proof that you got a signature on a birth date that lies further in the past than this 21 years. But you see already that's rather complicated, and if you had like a verifiable credential statement, you would have to map that down to this kind of formula, and that's just like part of it. That's just like a very simple equation even. So it gets much more complex if you look at more complex credential statement. So indeed, so the question now is, so if you had like here on the left-hand side, so this is a verifiable credential expression. So that's how one would do that. Now the question is, how can we translate that to the actual crypto? And I think that's where we want to come in with CKLang, because on the left-hand side, you see that it's all URLs. Oops, sorry, wrong button. It's all URLs, and on the right-hand side, it's only like integers, it's group elements and all of that. So there's a big gap in between. And so we want to fill this gap, or sort of make it easier to go from the left-hand side to the right-hand side. So if you want to have a library with different signature schemes, so we can have that library, and I think that's part of what we want to do for Hyperledger crypto. We want to have like different signatures on the right hand side, but we also want to sort of get closer towards like a mapping to these verifiable claims.
So is the high level idea then some kind of facade over the like a short signature or some other privacy preserving signature scheme?
Yeah, exactly. So so maybe I can skip. So here's sort of like a picture that makes it clear. So the verifiable claims, verifiable credentials at this level, right? So here you say, okay, so I want to have like a passport from issuer government on that contains first name and last name. And at the very low level here, the cryptographic primitive, it's a signature scheme that signs integers, right, or group elements. And so we want to somehow get in between those, so we want to have like a layered approach. And so the idea would be that CKLang here is like abstracts away the concepts. So at the level of CKLang, you only talk about signatures on messages. You no longer see cryptographic formulas, but you have a concept of signatures, you have a concept of encryption, But same way as you have the concept with X509, just like a I guess an XML signature or something like that. So you have you abstract the cryptography away, but you still have the concept of signatures, encryptions, maybe range proof, commitments, and so the difference would be the verifiable claims level. Sorry, it's I'm too fast here. The verifiable claims level. So you have URLs, you have issuer names and so on, first names, last names. At the CKLang level, you would no longer have the name of the issuer, but you would have the public key of the issuer. You would have the integers, so no longer strings as first name, last name, but you would have encoded them as integers already. You would no longer say over 18, but you would say birth date minus today is larger than 18, or maybe even encoding this in days. So you would do all of this all of these statements in integer rather. So that's the idea.
Am I understand right that zkLang is some language for definition of proof requests?
Proof requests exactly specifies the proof. So let me go to the next slide because actually here we have the language, right? So sorry, say it again.
Is it specifies proof or proof request? Because usually when I'm verifier, I, for example, I want that the prover proofs will prove me that, for example, age is more than 21.
Yes, so I guess the proof request would still be at the level of the verifiable credentials level, right? So I mean, a policy that you as a verifier that you would issue, you would do at the logical level, right? And then on both sides, it gets translated down into a CKLang statement. But I'm having a slide later on that explains how that would be orchestrated. So maybe we could postpone this question to until that slide comes up. It's coming up pretty soon. Okay, so here is sort of the high level view of the what we want to do with CKLang. So what kind of language this will be, and of course, I mean this will be JSON object. It's not. I mean, all of this language will be automatically translated from a verifiable claims statement. But the idea here is that you say, okay, so it's a non-interactive zero knowledge proof. Non-interactive zero knowledge proof that you know some integers m1, m2, m3. So this would be the secrets that you're having, and you also would state which integers or which messages you would reveal. So this would be here in the rectangular brackets, and then you say okay, so I know these secrets and these parts that I reveal, such the following the statement holds. That's a statement. The statement could also involve some constants and would involve the secrets as well as the values that you reveal. And so potential statements could be a credential or a signature if you want. And so I know a credential or possess a credential that is valid under the issuer's public key and that contains the messages or the integers M1, M2, M3, M4. So the example here, M4 would be revealed. So maybe you would reveal the year of birth, but you would not reveal your first name, last name, or like address or something like that. Again, at this level, we wouldn't even know that this is a birth date or it's an address or a last name. At this level, it's all integers or group elements. Another statement that we could make is an interval statement. So it's maybe that the M2 message is bigger than the first constant and smaller than the second constant. So that's for instance, you're birth date was encoded in days after 1972. Then, of course, with that you could encode, you could make a statement or translate the statement, the predicate appearing in the verifiable credential request into a statement. Okay, so that's into this interval statement. You might also want to show that maybe one of your signed messages is encrypted in some ciphertext here under some auditor's key, for instance. You would want to show that you have a like the pseudonymous public key here. The pseudonymous public key here would be your pseudonym that is related to your credential. You could also have scoped pseudonyms that would be unique for each scope. You could have relations between the different, could also request relations or state relations that hold between the different secrets that you have. So these are our, it's not like the full list of statements that we're going to support, but it's a subset of statements we're going to support. And of course, this can be combined. So if I have an expression like that, I would prove that I have a credential from this issuer, that the third message is in the ciphertext, that the second message is, for the second message, it holds that if I take today encoded in numbers of day after 1917, 72, that this is between 0 and 18 times 365. So this would be a statement that you're younger than 18. And also that this would be your pseudonymous public key that you could later on use to authenticate again or something like that. So these would be statements that we could show here. Okay, let's see what comes up next. Right, again, so I mean, now there's two mappings. The one mapping is to the verifiable claims, and the other mapping is to the cryptographic building blocks below. So for the verifiable claims, of course, if you have a verifiable claims, it has the URL of the issuer, then would have to download the public key in order to call up the CKLang, or in order to produce a CKLang statement. You would have to encode the string states, names, etc., into integers. All this encoding, all of the translation would be happening when you map a verifiable claim statement into a CKLang statement. Okay, so now I guess right, and then of course from the CKLang statement there would be another layer, and that would be inside the Hyperledger crypto that would then make sure that I can translate this. I prove to you that I have a credential, then that would be translated in the formula that I showed to you before, but then that would all be taken care of by the library. And again, so here's, I guess that goes back to the question of how we see that this whole thing is orchestrated. So you have here a prover and the verifier. So the verifier would do a verifiable credential request. So this would be in the verifiable credential kind of language. And then at the prover side, you would like parse this request. You would see whether you have the necessary credentials to actually satisfy this request. If you do have these credentials, you would generate two CKLang objects. The first object would be the proof spec here. That you would derive from the verifiable claims or credential request, the public keys of the issuers, and all of that. The second object, the CKLang objects, would be the witnesses. So that would be all the secrets that you are not going to reveal, that you keep secrets. And out of those two objects that gets passed down to CKLang or the CKLang library, then the CK proof will be generated. So that's the actual cryptographic proof that you know, the zero knowledge proof that you know a signature that satisfies this proof. So this is sort of the executed proof according to the proof spec. And the CKLang module here or library would then rely on the cryptographic primitives to implement that zero knowledge proof. And so, once you have the zero knowledge proof, you would transmit that to the verifier. And the way you would transmit that, you would sort of include that in the verifiable credential that you would send. And so the verifiable credential, I guess, very early on, if you remember, it has like a crypto blob or like the signature. And so this proof would actually be contained in the signature. You would send that to the verifier. The verifier would first check on a logical level whether actually the verifiable credential really satisfies your request. So if the request says, okay, I'm over 18 or over 21, so it would check whether that satisfies the access control policy that it had issued, so whether it's really the right kind of verifiable credential it required, like on a logical level. And then it would go on and also verify it on the cryptographic level. So again, it would also derive the proof spec from the verifiable credential. similar as the prover did, but it would of course have to do that itself in order to make sure that it's a right proof spec, that the proof spec matches the verifiable credential. Then it would call the CKLang module again, this with the proof spec. I'm always clicking, sorry. With the proof spec and the proof that was obtained from the prover that was contained inside the verifiable credential here would call CKLang, and CKLang, the CKLang module, that would again orchestrate all the cryptographic primitives here in order to verify whether this cryptographic proof is true. So it would check whether if the statement was that, okay, I know a credential, it would ask the signature module, is this really like a valid signature proof? It would ask the encryption, was this really a valid encryption proof for the cryptographic scheme being used, and so on. Of course, the result would then either be true or false, and then if it's true, then the verifier would be happy and give access. If it's false, I guess he would deny access. Right, so I guess on a high level, that's it. So here is an example of this CKLang object. So it's, here's the proof spec and the witness and the proof objects. So these are now JSON objects, slightly unorthodox format, but you can see it sort of, it here lists, so the proof spec would list which disclosed attributes have, and then it would list the different clauses that you would prove. So here would be the credential, another credential, some interval proof. So that would be the proof specification. Here it would be all the witnesses, all the actual values of the, that you would need in order to generate the proof. And the last one would be the actual proof, which would contain all the cryptographic values that realize the proof according to the proof spec. Okay, so any questions so far?
I have a question.
Sure.
This means cryptography language same used by ND group, means zero knowledge group. So it's the same methodology you have used, or it's a little bit different? Is there any difference between zero knowledge group, whatever ND group are using, same concept?
I mean, in some sense, it's exactly what Indy is using. It's just at a different extraction level. So it's not. I mean, it's exactly what they're using. It's what we have implemented in Fabric as well. Only that we did not insert this abstraction level, right? So we did directly encode all of these proofs. We did not structure the library in this way, right? So I mean, if I go back to the thing here, right? So if you have here. The way it's done now in Indy, they sort of map this directly down to these actual signature and encryption schemes and range proofs. So they did this mapping directly, whereas now we want to have a more modular approach such that you can have like one signature scheme here, but you could easily replace this with another signature scheme. Whereas in Indy, how it's done now, they just used RSACL credentials and that's it, right? So. From that point of view, I think this is much more generic, and it can also be used. I mean, you can realize anonymous credentials with that, but you can also realize all kinds of other constructions. So it's much more generic. Essentially, it describes zero knowledge proofs of statements that involve signatures, encryption schemes, commitment schemes, et cetera, et cetera. So you can build all kinds of sort of high-level cryptographic protocols with this library.
So is the motivation for the zkLang abstraction just to enforce separation between the cryptographic implementation and the higher levels, or is it meant more for actually having multiple cryptographic implementations that you can switch between dynamically?
I guess both of that. On the one hand, so without this abstraction level, I mean, people are, it's harder to understand the concepts that you need to use for verifiable claims. I think that's what we experienced with 3WC. They understood sort of the privacy concepts of anonymous credential and tried to encode it in verifiable claims or verifiable credentials. But then actually mapping that to the cryptographic algorithms, they were completely lost And CKLang is something that they can understand, and then they can deal with that. And so on the one hand, it's helping them to build systems. But on the other hand, of course, it is also making sure that if you want to change one signature scheme against another signature scheme, and depending on the context, you might want to use one signature scheme because it's more efficient, or because you want to do a threshold implementation of that, which is easier with that scheme than the other scheme. So we need to support like a multitude of signature schemes. And if these credentials were like hard coded the way from verifiable credentials to the low level credentials, that would be very difficult. So I guess the answer is both of those things.
Okay, thanks.
Right, I guess in terms of next step, I mean, we're sort of almost done finishing the CKLang spec, and now we really want to move to code, and I guess we're just at a call with Indy, or rather the Evernote people, that we're going to start coding things, so I guess ironing out the specification by starting to do some code, and that we already want to do in the current Git repository. And of course, in order to do that, we also have to specify all the cryptographic algorithms. So of course, we have a lot of specification already for the IdentiMixer Java library that we did. So we have some specification there. So in some sense, we did some of that work a long time, or since a long time already. And I guess, so we're just trying to cast this in this new framework.
Yeah, but actually, can we, for example, put proposals as PRs to Indy Crypto repo? Maybe we can just make a docs design folder and have some list of proposals as PRs and start community discussion on these proposals. Something process like, for example, Rust community use.
So I did not quite understand the question because the audio was a bit chopped off.
I propose to make a pull request with this design to Indy Crypto repo, and we can define some community process for accepting of these proposals.
Yeah, okay, sure. I guess, Manu, did you get that?
I think you're proposing to put specs in the Indy Crypto repository, right? Instead of in the Ledger Crypto Lib. Is that what you're saying?
Actually, I'm not sure about the right repo.
I think we have not talked about that yet. You know, whether proposal should be in the repository or part of a Jira item or what, right? We don't have that process.
Yeah, actually, for example, for libindy, we started use the process of putting proposals as pull requests to a libindy repo. And seems this proposal will be visible for all community members, and it looks as interesting process. So maybe we can also reuse this process here.
Yeah, so Sawtooth is using a similar thing, and I think we both picked that up from the Rust community. But the idea is that you put up a design concept as a pull request, and that enables everybody in the community to first be aware of it and then also to comment on it. And then I think the intent is you're more likely to get something that's coherent with the broader architecture than if people are developing specs or code in a silo.
I see, but if I understand it correctly, so I'm just looking at this Sawtooth link that you sent. But so, I mean, we would need to do this if we want to include this in Indy, right? So I think once we have something reasonable to say, it would probably be reasonable to make one of these pull requests in the Indy Crypto Lib to propose using that in Indy Crypto.
I think the idea was within this CryptoLib project, we would have a similar RFC mechanism.
Okay.
And so we would just all come to the central one. But Vyacheslav, you can correct me if I misspoke.
Yeah. But I'm not sure that it will work great for Hyperledger community. Maybe Hyperledger already have some place for shared Hyperledger's functionality. I don't know exactly. I have no experience in Hyperledger projects except Indie.
No, I think the closest thing would be the working groups, and they've been using things like Google Docs.
Yeah, but actually, I personally prefer to have designs as pull requests to our repos. Yeah. Google Docs are fine and great to write, but not really good place to share knowledge with community.
So back on the zklang material itself, could you relate that to snarks? So they're of course very popular in the blockchain space right now. Is that something that zklang could sit on top of? Is that, do you feel an orthogonal approach?
I would say orthogonal right now.
It's orthogonal, right? Indeed.
I mean, what we're trying to do is use a different. So, I mean, these snarks are very popular, but also very, expensive to compute. And of course, they're very generic, so you can prove whatever you want with them, but then you pay the price and efficiency. What we're doing here is the category of proofs that we need for all the identity management related stuff and more actually, which we compute very efficiently.
But actually I'm not sure that it's possible to implement CL based proofs over snarks. Actually with snarks, I don't have, for example, issuer, prover, verifier, and
I don't think anybody is proposing that.
Yeah, you could do that, but I guess what we want to do here is what people call generalized Schnorr proofs. So these kind of protocols, also like Grosser High proofs would fall in this category. And of course, in principle, you could implement what the language that we have done here with snarks, because at the end of the day, it's just like a logical statement that you could express by circuit. But that would be not very efficient. So the best way to implement that would be with Grosser High proofs or with generalized Schnorr proofs.
Thank you.
I have a question. Why would zklang specific to identity only? Could it be used for more general, like, you know, proof some value is in the range of so-and-so?
That is correct. So if you want to do, I don't know, an auctioning scheme that has some zero knowledge proofs, you could do that. Or voting schemes, you could do that. Group signatures, you could implement from this. So if you go to the crypto literature, there's like tons of higher level protocols that are sort of built from signature schemes, encryption schemes, and together with zero knowledge proofs. And all of those could be designed or implemented with this language. So it's still very generic, but I guess down to the point that you compose your protocols with signatures, encryption, and commitments.
Okay, thank you.
Awesome. Thanks a lot for the talk, Jan. That was very, very informative.
So you're welcome. I mean, do you want, shall I upload the slide somewhere? Would that be helpful? Or?
Yeah, that would actually be very helpful, I think. I don't know where to upload them. I guess...
I mean, I could just put them on my web page and then paste the link in the minutes.
Right.
Yeah, that would be wonderful.
Okay, I'll do that.
Dan and Mick, is this something that you think the Sawtooth crowd would be interested in working on or using?
Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting to us. We're trying to look across a variety of things, including including Snarks. I don't want to speak on behalf of the entirety of the community, but we're all definitely interested in this capability.
And sorry for the stuff that we're doing. It's this is pretty much orthogonal to the approaches we're taking. So, which is distinct from Dan's interest from Sawtooth's side.
So what
exactly? We're doing a couple different things. So one of the other labs projects here is the private data objects, and that's using trusted execution, and then. The other exploration that we would have would be using some of these more traditional cryptographic schemes like CL signatures or maybe slightly less traditionally the SNARKs to hide different kinds of information.
Could you talk more about that someday, Dan, about private data object?
That's actually a mix effort right now, so
I think, I certainly can go through that at some point in time.
Great.
Yeah, that would probably be something that would be interesting in general to this crowd.
And I will say our biggest issue has been trying to get any kind of crypto package that can run both inside an SGX enclave and outside and give essentially symmetric results. And this is where I go on my rant about, you know, cryptography and standards.
Can you give us the TLDR?
Well, maybe the TLDR.
Yeah, you really don't want it, no. there is no such thing as a standard in cryptography beyond the interface that a particular library implementation provides you at this point.
Maybe, though, for just a high level of what is PDO versus what we in Sawtooth might be using. Yeah, some other things for.
Okay. So, and the other thing I would do is I'd point you to some of the, you know, we've got the proposal and for the Hyperledger labs, there should be code up there. Given that, you know, it's so long as Intel doesn't introduce yet more hurdles we have to jump over, should be up there by the end of next week. The gist of it is that, all contract execution occurs inside an enclave, so you get privacy preservation. The state of the contract is encrypted so that we can actually do multi-enclave implementations of the contracts. What goes on the ledger, we're essentially moving all semantics off the ledger other than kind of ordering and commitment semantics. It's a commitment of a hash on the ledger or a transformation of hashes on the ledger, which are also uncorrelatable. I'm subject to the discussions, Hart, we've been having about Torness requirements. Let's see what else. So because it's all encrypted, even the owner of the object doesn't have access to the state unless the contract gives permission. Has policies for doing it, which means that you can do some really nice things with confidential information sharing. So computations can happen on data where the data itself is never visible. And so this addresses a lot of the GDPR kind of problems that we've seen. It's much more of a focus on data and data manipulation than it is on kind of financial assets. But it has many of the same characteristics. So that's the very, very short version of it.
Awesome. Thanks, Mick. We may ask you to give a talk on this in more detail, perhaps later on in this.
I would be happy to. I'd suggest wait until we get the code pushed up, and then we'll have some examples and some other things we can show.
Awesome. So I guess going back to the zkLang stuff, Manu and Jan, how do you guys want to move forward from this point with this?
Well, we have a couple of things to figure out. So first, the language of the implementation is not entirely decided yet, and it also depends a bit on what if we can do a single language that we that both Fabric and Indie would be interested in integrating, or whether we need different languages. Right, JavaScript. and other than that, I think we're planning to start, just putting code there fairly soon.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I guess you can just, you have the right permissions.
All right. So about that, I have no clear plan yet on how we should do it. Do you have a proposal? Like, should everybody make pull requests? Do we want other people to look at code, or do we first just,
Yeah, I was going to ask this. This is kind of up to the community. I mean, what do you guys want?
The approach that we've done for a lot of stuff in Sawtooth is to try to be language neutral by putting things like protobufs as the interface, and then you can implement behind that whatever you like. And so in that sense, I guess that's not so much direction towards a specific language, but just to keep an eye towards whatever implementation the underlying mechanisms are in to try to keep the API language neutral.
Yeah.
Oh, this was also a question about giving space in the repo, adding libraries, committing code. Ultimately, the process for adding a folder should probably not be sending me an email and then me sending Tracy an email.
Right.
Yeah, send Mick the email first.
Yes, we'll add sign Mick up for 10 spam websites and then send the email.
As long as I get to get into the dunking tank, I'm perfectly fine with that.
Well, if we do the pull request stuff for this, is Tracy the only person who can land PRs into the Hyperledger crypto library?
No.
I would think that everybody who signed up for for that particular lab should have PR access. Well, actually, anybody should be able to submit that a pull request.
I was going to say, that is the way it appears to be. So
great. I mean, if we did the...
Sean pushed his stuff up there.
Yes, but Sean... This happened by Sean emailing me and me emailing Tracy.
So we've got a process. What's the question?
So right now the process.
I just saw the update come through.
Yeah. So we should have a better process for this. And would anyone else? I mean, this is a small group. Would anyone else like pull access to this library?
Pull, or do you mean landing?
You know what I mean, landing pull request.
Merging. Yeah, of course. I mean, I think most of us should.
Yes. So.
And then the process should be just doing like a 2+2 kind of thing, right? Like as long as there's a couple, like we have a discussion, and as long as we can kind of come to consensus, then any one of us can land it. But we just have to be able to show that there has been discussion and it's been signed off by people.
I would like to pull.
Can you help set this up, Dave?
Yep, I can spearhead that. I'll talk to Tracy and well, I mean, as long as everybody's okay with that. I think Ben was going to say something.
Dan was going to say a different approach that we can take is that for each implementation, so if what we're talking about are like somebody wants to put up a C implementation of signatures, that could be a repo unto itself. And
I think Hart, what you're saying, like if we do things in the spirit of the original proposal that that I think you mostly wrote, where you know we have different sub projects and then every sub project has people with you know a couple people with you know sort of maintaining that, I think that structure makes sense, right? Because I will not be you know, I will not be looking into some of the other projects so much. So,
yeah. So this is Dave Huseby. I believe that the original intent of the Hyperledger crypto library was to just be a build infrastructure and then have Git sub repos pointing to the various implementations. There's sort of a middle ground there where there's code that we ourselves are writing that would be like a wrapper layer. So like the zkLang or whatever, right? I still think those should be separate repos. They may be run or managed by the Hyperledger crypto team, but I think they should be separate repos. And there's one very specific reason. It's that the Hyperledger crypto library, if it only has Git sub repos, then, you know, a Git sub repo is not only a URL to the other repo, but it's a specific revision of that repo. And so like the Hyperledger crypto library is supposed to be like, okay, all their tier ones are, you know, OpenSSL at this version, right? Mm-hmm. Not just OpenSSL in general. So if we were to structure it so that you had these sub repo links to the various implementations, then what we're curating is not only the implementations, but the versions as well. Right, I'm just throwing that out there. And so then the code should be in other repos, I think, to enable that.
So are you saying you would then propose separate repositories for every sub-project?
I mean, maybe yeah, we can do a... So. Yeah, yes, but I think maybe we can group them using, you know, a group under GitHub or something, right? You know, just kind of there's ways to organize it. But yes, I think the code itself should be in separate repos because yeah. The curation process of the top level crypto library has to be references and versions.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think having all of us have push access is the right way to go because I think we can manage ourselves pretty effectively. We'll just have to participate, you know, in the PR process and in the mailing list.
Yeah. So I guess Dave, if you could help set up something initially, something that works, that'd be great. And as we kind of mature and get things in place, yep. We can move towards the steady state that we define in the proposal document.
Let me refine that just a little bit. What if each individual that is suggesting creating something actually basically make a lab request and that will create a repo? And what that will save is that if Dave goes out and creates 10 repos because people are happy to say in a call that they'd like to make a, you know, a C++ implementation of a Bonabayan signature, but nobody ever shows up to do it, you know, we have a bunch of empty repos and it looks like a dead project.
That's a good idea, Dan. So you want to raise the bar a little bit so that people will take personal ownership of it.
Right. If you're going to sign up to do something, that's great.
Yeah, I agree with that.
On the other end, I don't want to overwhelm the poor labs project.
Overwhelm it.
Let's do it. That's what it was for. I know it's Tracy, but I'll talk to Tracy and she can deputize all the crypto stuff to me, I'm sure. So.
Okay.
So then concretely for the zkLang thing, are you saying that you want to have us make a labs proposal, a separate labs proposal?
Yeah, I believe that bar is pretty low, right? Just write up what you want to do, which you sure. seem to already have mostly.
And then
I'll talk to Tracy about managing all the requests coming in for the crypto stuff. We'll CC her on it, but I'll make sure that she's okay with me setting up the repos and the labs.
Yeah, it might sound like there's a lot today, but I bet we're not going to end up with more than, you know, three or four of those.
No, I think this makes sense because, like, there's some things, like, we saw that request from the Quilt team where they said, you know, there's this crypto thing we've got, we don't want in Quilt anymore, but there are people still working on it. Then we can go and talk to them, get a labs request, pull it over, that kind of stuff. I mean, it just makes it very clear what we're supposed to do with code like that.
Dave, can you clear this with Tracy and give us an update then?
Yep. So I'll drop it in the chat, you know, what she says, or, you know, our next meeting, I'll report back.
Okay.
Do we have a mailing list set up for this? I'm pretty sure we do, right?
No, labs projects don't have mailing lists.
Gotcha. So
I've kind of created an impromptu mailing list with just the emails I've grabbed from people.
Yeah.
But I asked about this, and this is kind of, I was a little hesitant to start spamming the labs email list about this.
Yeah.
I kind of wanted to, because it would force them to give us a mailing list. but it wouldn't be polite.
Yeah. Okay. Let me talk to Tracy about this, and then I'll probably just drop it in the Rocket Chat. And I can probably pin it. I think our chat supports pinning posts, but anyway, I'll check it out. And then I'll report back in our next meeting at the very least. So watch the crypto repo, and maybe I'll do PRs, and so we can talk about it there. I don't know. We'll figure
it out. And what do we want to do with the code that Sean has already added?
I think we'll probably remove it out. Let me talk to Sean. I don't want to just move his stuff without telling him. So we should talk to Sean.
We could just make that lab or that repo be the simple signing interface that it was intended to be anyway.
Okay. Dan, will you worry about that and figure out what we're going to do with Sean's code?
Yeah. Cause I think the we didn't have the indie guys to speak to it today, but there was the first half of what Hart had led off with, that we would have that very simple signing API unified.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, awesome. Well, we're at end of time, so I don't want to keep you guys. But yeah, I think, Dave, if you can just set up something that works for now, and we can move to, like something that we've agreed to in a proposal document later on.
Great. So, yep, I'll take over.
Awesome. All right, well, thanks everybody for joining. Thanks especially to Jan for an excellent presentation.
Yeah, thanks, Jan.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to everybody in 2 weeks. Thank you so much, everyone.
All right, thanks.
Great, thanks. Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.